This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, Thane Maynard talks to the author of a book encouraging parents to get outdoors and enjoy nature with their kids. But first, many younger audiences know her from the classic movie White Christmas, but to millions, Rosemary Clooney will always be America's favorite girl singer. And in Cincinnati, we've always proudly claimed her as our own. Now a new musical biography, Tenderly, the Rosemary Clooney musical, details her rise from childhood to Hollywood stardom, her battles with depression, and her triumphant comeback. Tenderly opened last week and runs through January 4th at the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park's Thompson Shelter House Theater. The musical was written by local playwrights Janet Vogt and Mark Friedman. They recently sat down with Rick Pender to talk about bringing the life and music of America's favorite girl singer to the stage.
Janet and Mark, who live in Greater Cincinnati, have developed a national reputation with musicals, especially for young audiences, based on works like Anne of Green Gables and How I Became a Pirate, as well as some original titles such as The Magical Adventures of Merlin and my favorite title, I'm sorry I haven't seen it yet, but Rapunzel, Rapunzel, A Very Hairy Tale. That's just a great title. I'd go, if that were in a marquee, I'd walk in and watch.
That's so great.
This show about Rosemary Clooney is something rather different. It's a more adult work, I imagine. And with Tenderly, you've put together a show that uses songs that Rosemary Clooney made famous. So let's talk about why the two of you undertook this. Janet, maybe you'd like to start.
Well, Mark and I have been longtime fans of Rosemary Clooney, and we each have our own memories of her. Mine, for instance, is I'm a piano player, and as a young girl, I would play Tenderly at the piano, and my father would sing it to my mother. And Mark, what about the parties at your family's house?
My family, all the cousins would get together on a Friday night, my parents and their cousins, and they would dance to 45s out in the backyard.
Bacha Me,
Rosie Clooney tunes, and it was just a fond memories of those days.
So what motivated you then beyond a fondness from nostalgic purposes to undertake this particular show?
Well, we both love Cincinnati history, and Rosie, of course, is a great part of that history. She's a local icon. Her whole family, Nick, with his broadcast career and his writing career for the Post when he was living in Cincinnati years ago. And of course, their son, George, who shot the movie Ides of March here. But beyond that, she's always been a Cincinnati name, I think, for many, many years, at least just all my life being here.
We just love Cincinnati history. It's not the only musical we've done about Cincinnati figures. We have one in the works with Joe McDonough about George Remus, the famous king of the bootleggers. And we also have a piece we've written about Harriet Beecher Stowe, who lived here for 18 years when it was a border state. So it seemed like a natural fit for us.
It is a little different, though, because it's not your music. Usually you two create the music for the shows that you do.
Yes, Mark and I have a very unique writing relationship. We both write music, we both write lyrics, we both write the book. So many teams, one does one discipline or the other. So this really put our skills to test as the playwrights, because the music, as you said, is from the Great American Songbook, the songs that Rosemary Clooney made famous, all except from one original piece, which we did sneak in there.
Part of the challenge was to craft a script where the music would flow in and out of the writing. And it's remarkable how many of those songs she made famous really are
the songs of her life.
Mm-hmm. So they reflect periods and events in her life. And
absolutely.
Very much so. For instance, when she meets and falls in love with Jose Farrar, you'll hear Tenderly. When she meets Dante Palio, who she ended up marrying eventually, you'll hear Bacha Me. The songs just seem to fit perfectly.
Let's talk a little bit more about how you tell this story on stage. You have a big cast of characters. You just don't have a lot of actors doing them. So talk a little bit about that.
There are two characters, Rosemary and her doctor. And many people don't know this, but Rosemary was present at the assassination of Bobby Kennedy. And she had had a lot of challenges with drugs, and it was sort of her breaking point. And she actually lost touch with reality and eventually had to be committed. Well, actually, she committed herself into the hospital.
And all of this is clearly outlined in her two books that she's written, two of the books and two of the source materials that we use for the writing of the script. But She had no bones about it. She'd tell everybody about it. And I think it's information that the common person who may just love White Christmas doesn't really know about. And so we think that it's kind of a neat context to tell the story. And we want to make sure, too, that they understood the troubles and the trials she had throughout her life, but that she reinvented herself and came up on top.
So there is an actor who plays the doctor, but there are other people in the story.
Right. The doctor actually becomes other characters. As we say in the first rule of playwriting is don't tell, show. And so rather than hearing her talk about her mother, for instance, the doctor will become the voice of the mother, and you'll see a conversation replay, her conversations with Jose Farrar or her sister Betty, and you'll see the people in her life come alive. And it's really interesting how seamlessly it flows and how you just don't even think of the doctor as the doctor for those brief moments in those scenes.
And then you turn around and he's suddenly in the chair again talking to her. It's as if in his therapy with her, in her mind, she's reliving the moment. And through the doctor, through the words and the voice of the doctor. So it's pretty unique and interesting.
Well, this means you've created interesting acting challenges for two performers. One has to recreate Rosemary, and the other has to be a whole lot of different people. You want to talk a little bit about the actors who are in the Playhouse production?
We have two marvelous actors. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, we're so grateful. Our Rosemary is Susan Hafner, and we went to New York with the Playhouse staff and auditioned and looked at many wonderful actors. And she definitely came out as the forefront.
And our doctor is played by Michael Morata, who was a wonderful actor, also from New York. His ability to go between characters is just marvelous. Local theatergoers might remember him from the Playhouse's recent production of Cabaret.
He played Herr Schultz in that. Yes, and he was wonderful in that. So that's another aspect of this to look forward to. I want to ask you, you mentioned, Janet, your particular affection for the song Tenderly with some family elements to it, but you've also used this as the title of your show. You want to talk a little bit about why that song? Because there's about 16, 17 songs in the show that you probably could have used, you know, many of those titles. So why Tenderly?
Well, we really felt like we wanted to treat the story of Rosemary with great tenderness. And she herself was a warm, inviting, tender person. And we felt the title really paid tribute to her.
And there isn't a person that we talked to in doing our research, friends in Maysville, relatives, family.
Chance meetings.
That didn't love her and love her personality and speak of her with tenderness.
The show has a bit of a past, and a not too distant past, and not too distant distance from Cincinnati. It started with a workshop at Dayton's Human Race Theater Company back in 2010, and then was given its stage premiere at Dayton's Victoria Theater 2 years later. The production has evolved since then. Could you talk a little bit about what is different about it now?
We originally did the show in a workshop format at the Human Race Theater in Dayton. It was in its beginning stages and began to evolve, and scenes were written and rewritten and so forth. But it was a one-act show, one-act musical. When we took it from there about a year or so later to the Victoria stage in Dayton, same company, Human Race Theater, it stayed a one-act. We had made significant changes in it, but it stayed a one-act. And then when we brought it to Cincinnati, we expanded the show into two acts. So we went from 12 songs to 17 songs. So there's a lot more music in the show now.
You're working closely with Blake Robison, who's the artistic director at the Playhouse. In fact, he's directing the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I presume that part of your process has been to continue to refine it in conjunction with Blake and with the actors. You want to tell us anything more about that?
It's been a wonderful collaborative experience. Actually, I was surprised how much tweaking and rewriting we're doing. And it's because it all really kind of starts at the top, as they say. And he's very inviting. He has a way of saying things that let you know his eye is on the work and his ear is on the work. And it makes you want to look at your work and continually refine it. And everybody keeps raising the bar on it, including actors, Mark, me, everyone.
And when you see the show start to take shape with the actors reading their lines and so forth, you begin to see, well, what's working? This isn't working. Maybe we need to change that. Maybe we need this scene to be tweaked. And it's just been a marvelous collaborative experience.
That means it just keeps getting better and better, I presume.
Well, that's our hope. That's our goal.
I think that the last thing that I wanted to ask you about was, you mentioned earlier a little bit about the Clooney family. Did they play a part in helping you develop the show?
When we started our research about Rosemary, we, of course, wanted to go to Maysville and really explore her roots. We were fortunate to meet Mike Thomas, the producing artistic director at the Maysville Opera House, who was a very, very close friend of hers. And he gave us wonderful stories and anecdotes. And he also introduced us to Ben Breslin, her cousin, and we went to visit him. And so we started to meet people who knew her personally. We did not meet Nick and Nina Clooney till the premiere at the Dayton Theater, and they were very gracious and lovely.
And extremely supportive, of our work, and very grateful that we were bringing the name of Rosemary Clooney back into the public eye again.
I suspect if all of you out there listening wish that you could meet Rosemary Clooney, that you might be able to fulfill that wish by going to the Playhouse now through the end of the year. The show opens this Thursday and will continue through the holidays until December the 28th. You'll find more information at WVXU.org. My guests this evening have been theatrical partners Mark Friedman and Janet Folk, along with the spirit of Rosemary Clooney. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Rick.
Rick Pender speaking with playwrights Janet Vogt and Mark Friedman, who created Tenderly, the Rosemary Clooney musical. After the break, we'll talk with the actors and the director of Tenderly. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
Opened wide and closed me inside.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're talking about Tenderly, the Rosemary Clooney musical, which runs through January 4th at the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park. My guests are artistic director Blake Robison and actor Susan Hafner, who portrays Rosemary, and Michael Murata, who plays the part of the doctor, along with several other roles during the production. Have you seen the musical? Have you got any memories of Rosemary Clooney? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Blake, what's it been like bringing Rosemary's story back home to the tri-state area?
Well, it's been an absolute joy for us. We've had a fantastic time. You know, at this time of year, when we're entering the holiday season, we have our big production of Christmas Carol playing on the larger Mark stage. We're always looking for something special and unique to go in the shelter house space. And I think Tenderly has turned into that rare piece of theater, which is both artistically vital, but also touching and highly entertaining for the audience. So it's been a great treat so far.
What's giving an overview of the musical? There's a lot packed into this, isn't there?
There is a lot packed in. It's what we refer to as a bio musical. So it takes you through the ups and downs of Rosemary's life from when she was a young girl all the way to her reinvention of herself as a jazz singer later in life. Along the way, you have songs which she made famous. In this case, the songs are interwoven into the story of the play, I think in a clever and unique way. So unlike some bio musicals, it's not song, scene, song, scene, song, scene. The music is embedded within the scene work, within the text of the play. And so I think it's fair to describe this as a little bit more of a biographical play with music.
Mm-hmm. What kind of a reaction have you gotten to it?
It's been tremendously popular thus far. There's no question. There's a lot of ownership over the Clooney story, the Clooney family, the Clooney legacy here in Cincinnati. And I think that's what brings people in the door. But of course, once they're there, they have to have a wonderful time. And it is. It's a great night out, surprisingly touching and hugely entertaining.
Susan, Rosemary Clooney had a remarkable run with all the signature songs she had that topped the charts for nearly five decades. What's it been like for you to portray someone who's such a legendary performer?
At first, I think it was a little intimidating. I mean, my goodness, who am I to say I can celebrate her life? And then the minute I started researching it and getting into the books and working with the creative team, I just fell in love with her. And it's all about celebrating her and grabbing onto her personality and grabbing onto the richness of her voice. And it's just been nothing but a thrill ride. I love doing this role.
Has playing the part of Rosemary made you feel like you know her better?
Very much so. Yeah, I mean, a lot of what I've grabbed onto is from the playwrights and learned a lot from what they've, you know, the script that they brought into the room, and also read her two autobiographies and internet research. I feel like I know her intimately, and I hope I do at this point.
Michael, you have my admiration. How many different roles do you play in this production?
12 in all.
12 different. How do you keep them all straight?
In rehearsal, Mark, that's not something that comes easily, but that's what rehearsals are for. And by the time we get to performances, I don't really have to think about it so much. It comes easily because it flows so well, and each trigger point in every scene brings us back to a place in time in either flashback or memory that kind of tells us where we're going. And that helps me to pop back in and out of character.
And we like to say that Susan plays Rosemary and Michael plays everyone in the play not named Rosemary.
Yes. And very convincingly. Yeah, he plays my sister, my mother.
Have you ever done something like that before, Michael, in another play?
Yes, but not something that has been a new piece like this, and also not something that has been based on people that we know, Frank Sinatra, Merv Griffin, Jose Ferrer. These are popular characters in our lives and part of the 20th century icon of celebrity. And that makes it a little bit more daunting. But having known who these men are and loving these men and what they've given to our culture and our heritage, it allows it to become more of an homage. And also, it's never an impersonation. It's an essence. And what we're telling is a part of what Rosemary remembers, so that the pictures don't have to be as perfect as we think they should be. It's how she remembers them. And that's what I try to do.
Now, among your many roles, is there a favorite that you're playing?
There are transitions that are favorites. To go from an Italian playboy to a sort of snappy mother to a drunken actor husband who's a bit of a runaround, that's really fun. It's really very sort of, something to relish.
And if I may, one of the wonderful things about watching Michael do this is that it's all done through small variations in his posture or his vocal treatment of the text. He's not changing costumes every time.
Not at all.
It may simply be, I put on a fedora and throw my jacket over my shoulder, and that's an image, an iconic image of Frank Sinatra that we all know from the covers of those old albums. Mm-hmm. And then all he has to do is change his body position, stand in a different way, and he becomes Jose Ferrer.
Wow. That's amazing. Like I say, you've got my admiration. I don't know how you do something like that.
Well, when you come and see the show, you'll find out.
I'll find out exactly. 513-419-7100 to join our conversation. Let's talk with Joe and Over the Rhine. Good afternoon, Joe. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Blake, we're Playhouse subscribers, and I'll give a blatant plug for Playhouse to all the listeners out there. We were supposed to go Sunday and couldn't go, but the Playhouse subscriber, you can change your tickets to another night. That's it. And so we get to see it Tuesday, guys, so be on your best behavior.
We're ready.
You've been warned. Joe is coming.
Excellent.
First question, I'll be the big laugh in the audience. I'm always the big laugh.
Oh, good. We love that.
First question, actors. Is this your first performance, or were you in the previews up in Dayton?
First time.
Both of us. First time,
first time,
yeah.
First time for both. Okay. So, Blake, this question probably is more for you then. If I heard in the previous show, the Rick Pender episode, it started with a preview or whatever you call that, a reading at the Human Race, tiny, almost a little bigger than Shelter House, but tiny. Then it went to Victoria, which, if I'm not mistaken, big house.
Yes, about 1,200 seats, I understand.
Yeah. So what was your decision process in putting it in the Marks versus waiting till the spring or something and filtering it into the Marks Theater, but putting it in the Shelter House? Do you think it plays better small?
I think it could go either way. But as I said before, we're looking for something to play opposite Christmas Carol, which will complement that. There are a lot of people who see Christmas Carol, but they also want to see something that is entertaining and cheerful, but not necessarily holiday oriented. I also think that because it's just the two actors, the audience is served well by the intimacy that the Shelter House provides.
Yeah.
And if I may add to that, we're experiencing this intimacy. There's a conversation happening with the audience and ourselves. You hear the audience reacting to certain moments, and it fuels us. So it's pretty exciting.
You know, I'd love to ask that question because, you know, the last show that you're following, I loved I Lost M.H. Spaghetti. Oh my God, what an intimate interaction between the audience and the actor.
True.
And so I'm really looking forward to that. That's one of the things I love about the Shelter House is you're just so close. Rosemary's one of my, you know, we don't go through a Christmas without White Christmas, but we also love all the other, you know, I love her music, you know, that voice is just to die for.
Hey, Joe, thank you very much.
You got it.
We appreciate the call.
We'll see you Tuesday.
Blake, what are the production needs like for Tenderly? They're pretty simple, aren't they?
It is fairly simple in that we have a beautiful jazz combo, piano, bass, and drums, who are in the upstage area. And these guys are down on the main deck of the stage simply with two chairs. It's surrounded by some period drapery, some old-fashioned vintage curtains. So you should have the feel that you've stepped back in time a little bit. But within that construct, we can take you anywhere you need to go, from the doctor's office to the back lot at Paramount to Rosemary's grandmother's home in Maysville. To the Hollywood Bowl, just by changing the lights and shifting our body positions a little bit.
Let's listen to one of the songs that Susan performs in the music. This is Love You Didn't Do Me Right.
My one love affair didn't get anywhere from the start.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Very, very good. What was your goal in portraying Rosemary Clooney? Did you go into this thinking that you had to create a dead-on impersonation of her?
Absolutely not. And I think from the audition and from the creative team's input from the beginning, the research, the discussions with Michael, it was about recreating her life, about celebrating her life, certainly understanding her emotional journey and capturing that and taking the ride with her, studying her phrasing, how her voice, she had a humidity and a richness in her voice, and trying to capture that without impersonating, which is a tricky, just a fine line. But I also, Scott Woolley would talk to me as music director and say, you know, we want to capture, this is how we phrase it here, and then add a little Susan. So we found it. So it's sort of a theatrical Rosemary. And that way we can honor this artist bringing her to life and then Rosemary at the same time.
Sounds like it might be a little bit of a blend between you and Rosemary.
I think it's a mishmash. I loved studying her physical mannerisms. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of internet research and finding and watching White Christmas and as many videos as I could get my hands on and finding out how she would move in space and then sort of adding my own little touch to that as well.
Did you grow up listening to Rosemary Clooney, or was most of this new to you?
I did. My mother had the 45 of Come On to My House, and I remember stealing it and playing it on my own little record player. So, yes, we had it. Also, Susie Snowflake, we all played the piano, and I was playing along with her sheet music, and I told Mom to pull it out and send it to me for Christmas.
I think whatever you know about Rosemary, you're going to learn something more when you come to see this musical. There's so much information packed in there. It gives it a richness of texture and an interest, even to Clooney fans. Of course, if you only know White Christmas or if you only remember the Coronet TV commercial, which I remember from my youth, there's a ton to learn. But even seriously, devoted Clooney fans are going to find something new in this.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation, we're talking about Tenderly, the Rosemary Clooney musical. And let's talk with Matt in Pleasant Ridge. Good afternoon, Matt. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
So I have to say, I went and saw the dress rehearsal with my wife and two friends the night before it opened.
Oh.
Thanks to Jack Rouse, because he's awesome. And we were blown away, completely blown away. The set, the three musicians, the two actors, I mean, I'm not going to do a spoiler here, but completely blown away, especially for the younger generation. It's definitely something they should see. And that evening, we went home and Googled Rosemary Clooney and looked up all of her top hits. I'm a record collector, and I had no idea some of the standards out there were her personal standards that she put her personal touch on. It was really amazing.
That's great, Jack. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt. We appreciate the comment. 513-419-7100. If you would like to join our conversation about Tenderly, the Rosemary Clooney musical. And Michael, we were talking about the various different roles that you do in this production.
Yeah.
Is there one that's particularly tough for you?
Tough. No, I don't think so. I don't think there's a tough one. I think that they're all, you know, like Susan was saying earlier, to find the essence of the character and to add yourself to it, because I mean, our toolbox is who we are. That's what we can bring to it, is what we know and how we play it. And again, I did grow up listening to this music. I do know who these people are. I love this period in style. As a kid, I was saturated with old black and white movies. My father had WNEW in New York with, you know, William B. Williams, the chairman of the board, playing night and day. So there was, none of this music is new to me. I feel sometimes it's the perfect marriage of time and place. And this is a style and a period that I feel very comfortable in.
You also actually took a trip to Maysville, didn't you, to do some more research on Rosemary?
Oh my
what
God.
Was that like?
What a fantastic
we did.
Day.
Yeah, we got to take the day off from rehearsal and went to Maysville.
Field trip.
I've never been so lucky. Usually I have to do that on my own before rehearsals begin. So Blake took us down and it was an incredible day. We actually went to many of Rosemary's haunts. We got to see one of the houses she spent 4 years in, I think, her grandmother's house on West 3rd Street. We actually got to see it, and that's mentioned in the play. It was an incredible day.
We had so many great caretakers that day and tour guides. And, you know, everybody has a Rosemary Clooney story. And so that, like Blake was saying earlier, I think everyone who thinks they know all the Rosemary Clooney stories will be surprised at how many more they haven't heard yet. And we heard a ton of them that day. It was like doing a month of research in 5 hours. It was overwhelming in the best sense of the word.
Absolutely. And then after Maysville, we just drove over to Augusta to go to her house, which of course has been turned into the Rosemary Clooney Museum.
Right.
And brother Nick and his wife Nina were kind enough to meet us there and share some of their personal history with Susan and Michael, and that was tremendously valuable.
What does Nick think of this?
He has been so supportive, really, from the earliest days, from the previous production in Dayton, which the caller mentioned, to this, which is a reworked and expanded version. He's been nothing but positive and enthusiastic. He was there on opening night. In fact, a number of Clooney relatives have already been to the Playhouse just over this first week and a half. And on opening night, he came up to me afterwards and said, "So what do you think, Blake? Does this thing have legs?" I took that as a good sign.
Well, to all of our credit, you know, he was the first one up on his feet and led the standing ovation, pumped his arm in the air. So I think he liked it.
Well, after the break, we'll continue our conversation about Tenderly, the Rosemary Clooney musical. Got any memories of Rosemary that you'd like to share? Give us a call at 513-419-7100. Later in the show, Let Them Be Eaten by Bears, fearless advice for taking your children into the great outdoors.
And I fall asleep, counting my blessings. When my bankroll is getting small, I think of when I
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're talking about Tenderly, the Rosemary Clooney musical, with Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park artistic director Blake Robison and actors Susan Hafner and Michael Murata. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Blake, how do you handle a performance like this where you're trying to balance things out? You're trying to be respectful of the memory of Rosemary Clooney while at the same time showing that she had a lot of problems in her life at one point.
Well, she was very public about her problems. If you read the autobiographies, there's a lot of candor. And so we didn't really worry about that so much, but certainly we wanted to be respectful and honest and celebratory about this project. We were talking about Nick Clooney just a little while ago. When we saw him in Augusta, he said to us, "You know, my one requirement, my one wish for this project is that it's done honestly and professionally. And I thought that was a great guideline. We of course, embrace that all the time at the Playhouse. You know, I'm in my third year as artistic director of Playhouse in the Park, and I wanted to use this project as a way for me, as a theater director, to get to know my new city better. And it's been that over and over and over, because everybody does have a Clooney story. But more than that, I think that represents a respect and a love for family and community that pervades this entire region. And you see that in Rosemary's story and in her triumph over her adverse circumstances.
513-419-7100. To join our conversation, let's talk with Janet and Amelia. Good afternoon, Janet. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hello there. Thank you very much for putting this on. I can't wait to see the show. But I wanted to share with you that I'm so pleased that Betty is getting recognized in this musical. Mm. When I was a little girl, I grew up in the greater Detroit area and watched Detroit television. And Betty Clooney would come on with, I think it was a half an hour program, after the 11 o'clock news. I was supposed to be in bed, but my mother didn't know, didn't hurt anyone. And she always wore beautiful gowns. She was a brunette. And she seemed petite, and I was just so enamored of her, and I'm so pleased that people are learning that she existed. I think she died way too young, and I don't really know much more about that, but I remember being so surprised to find out, she looks like Rosemary Clooney, except her hair is different. My sister-in-law said they're sisters.
It is a fun and interesting part of the musical very early on.
Yeah.
We see that period of Rosemary's life where she and Betty went down and they auditioned at the radio station and then got picked up by Tony Pastor and his orchestra. So it's part of the fabric of the Clooney story.
Janet, thank you for the call. And let's listen to another one of the songs from the musical. Again, it's Susan and she's singing White Christmas. I missed Michael, didn't I, Susan? He's in there too.
He's in there too.
No, that's yeah. Bing.
I tried doubling my voice.
That's Michael yeah. as Bing Crosby. That's right.
Oh, I love his Bing. Oh.
Very good. What was your favorite song to perform in this?
I think hands down it's Botcha Me.
Okay.
There's a great scene where Rosemary first meets the love of her life, eventually Dante DiPaolo. And there's a lovely scene that just sort of leads naturally into Botcha Me, which becomes a lovely dance number. And they fall in love and they flirt. And it's just such a great melody, such a great tune. And then we get to, I love working with Michael, we get to have a ball together. So that's my favorite.
And it's also the audience loves it because it takes you out of the, you know, the book part of the show. And it supplies them with something they're extremely well versed in. They know the song really well. Everyone has a memory about it from their own childhood. And they get to see a classic sort of old-fashioned, let's put on a show kind of musical moment in the show. And we have a great time doing it.
I think that's a great point, Michael. All the songs in here serve different purposes. Mm-hmm. One of the fun things about it is that you take a classic song that perhaps just existed as a wonderful piece of music in the
Pop
American
tune.
Songbook,
yeah.
and we repurpose it by putting it in the context of Rosemary's life. It can take on new meaning and shed light on the relationships that she was in the midst of.
Yeah.
Michael, was there anything that surprised you about Rosemary that you learned as you were doing this production?
Well, I didn't know the extent of her involvement in things like Bobby Kennedy's campaign and eventual assassination and how much it affected her at that
point
in
her life.
It did alter her life. It completely altered it because, like many other performers of her era, Tony Bennett is a great example. They were at their high point in the late 50s and early 60s, and then once the British invasion came in and that music took over, these people who were on pedestals found themselves without a career. They weren't performing. Nobody was listening to them. Nobody was buying their records. And that helped this sort of tailspin that many of them took. And so for that to be a turning point in her life was news to me. I didn't really know about that part of it, and that's a big part of our story.
Blake, what's the message behind Tenderly? This is a story about hope and resurrection, isn't it?
Absolutely. About perseverance, about being true to oneself, and an appreciation of the things that really matter in life. You know, we all have that conversation with ourselves on certain occasions, and Rosemary has that conversation in a big way. And I think that's her life lesson. And once she learns it, she's able to move on and reinvent herself and become a well-balanced adult.
And it's been extended through January 4th, hasn't it?
So we are very pleased to have announced the extension. Yes, tickets are going fast, and we hope all your listeners will join us.
We've been talking with Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park Artistic Director Blake Robison, actors Susan Hafner and Michael Murata. Thanks, everybody, for being here this afternoon.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
And they're currently performing in Tenderly, the Rosemary Clooney musical. And as Blake was saying, the play runs through January 4th at Playhouse in the Park. And you can find information on our website, WVXU.org. Let's wrap up our discussion with a bit of Rosemary's version of Sweet Kentucky Ham, a tune that she called the quintessential road song. Stay tuned for more Cincinnati Edition on 91.7.
And you feel like you're forever on the phone. Half past ten, let it ring. Dial again, same damn thing. And you're really getting hungry for some talk. Grab a shower, take a walk. It's 3 a.m. They're serving up last call in Cincinnati. But it's still a nighttime town. If you know your way around, and despite yourself, you find you're wide awake, and you're staring at your scrambled eggs and steak, and you must admit your heart's about to break.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Do you remember when you were growing up playing in creeks and walking through the woods? Have you ever shared some of those experiences with your kids? Peter Brown Hoffmeister, director of the South Eugene, Oregon High School's Integrated Outdoor Program and author of Let Them Be Eaten by Bears, A Fearless Guide to Taking Our Kids into the Great Outdoors, talked with the Cincinnati Zoo's Thane Maynard about enjoying the wonders of nature with your kids.
Hi, Peter Hoffmeister. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm glad we caught you when you're not out in the wilderness, because this book of yours is terrific, Let Them Be Eaten by Bears. Now, I know you spent more than 10 years...